Good news, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not dead. The COVID booster did not kill me. I honestly, in the middle of last week's recording, in case you guys, well, whether you were there or whether you were not there, I took a COVID booster the same day that we recorded last week, and it was the worst I'd ever reacted to any sort of injection. Like, I don't think I've ever reacted to any injection, but I reacted to that one. In the middle of the podcast, while we were recording, my eye was ballooning red and turned into, like, starting to look like a golf ball. And then for the next 3 days, just all these random symptoms coming in and messing me up, like muscle aches and just feeling off balance. It was horrible. But thankfully, by the way, in case you guys were wondering why I had to take it as a part of something that I have to do. Not because I wanted to, but anyways. You're not here to hear us talk about that. I just wanted to clarify just in case people were worried. You're here to hear us talk about video game news. But very quickly before I get into that, I want to introduce my co-host, the Maximum News Show, Cybsidian of the SSS League. How are you doing, man?
It's that time of the year where things get really stressful. So it's been blah. And the news doesn't help either, because the news has been horrible.
Yeah, I think we're starting off with, I guess, one piece of positive news, and then everything else is just a squalor of negativity. So buckle up, but it's important, and we need to talk about all of it. So let's just start off with the good news. Saib, here's something that might shock you. I have not seen the Super Mario Brothers movie, neither the original or the new one.
You are missing out so much, my friend. Dude, the original Super Mario movie was quite possibly one of the greatest sins of cinematography ever to exist.
Right. And how do you mess up Dennis Hopper as a Koopa? I know about that, but I don't. And I know John Leguizamo was Luigi, and I know about the whole Mario Luigi Mario thing. But yeah, no, I've never seen it because I've just heard how terrible it was, and I never saw the newer one just because I've heard so many mixed things. Like, I know you enjoyed it, and I know a couple of other people that enjoyed it, but I know a fair amount of other people that are just like, yeah, it was fine. Like, I've never really gone out of my way to see it. But the reaction that I have heard was good enough that if I were to hear that there was going to be a sequel to it, I would probably want to go check it out, because they would probably want to start developing more of a story in order to continue trading out these things, especially because, well, you know, the first movie that came out last year was the second highest grossing movie, just about $100 million behind Barbie. Yeah. And naturally, when a movie makes that much money, you're going to get a sequel. Well, it was officially confirmed just a couple days ago. We're recording this on March 12th. And on March 10th, a.k.a. Mario Day, get it, M-A-R-10, and the 10 looks like an I-O. It was announced by Shigeru Miyamoto, the Nintendo legend, and Chris Meledandri, I think he's the CEO of Illumination. I'll double check that in just a second. They announced to the world that we are in fact getting a sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie that came out last year. The same team is going to be on board, the same co-directors from the first movie, Aaron Horvath and Michael Jelinek. They're going to be back, and also the same writer from the first movie is going to be back. The same guy that did, I think he did the Lego Movie 2, and he also did Minions: The Rise of Gru, both of which were, I saw the Lego Movie 2. It was nowhere near as good as the first one, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a decent film. And from what I understand, Minions 2 is not all that bad either. So I'm fine with it. I just hope that whatever they do with Super Mario Brothers 2, it sort of goes to trying to set up this bigger Mario universe, or maybe even a Nintendo universe, which might culminate in like a Super Smash Brothers Avengers Secret Wars type of scenario. I'd be down for that. Anyways, that's all I'm really able to offer in regards to this. Saib, you hear the news that we're getting a sequel to this. It's coming out in 2026. Are you excited?
I think that the Mario movies got halfway there to really cementing themselves as a good pillar for like children's entertainment going forward.
Yeah.
I say that because I did find Peach's like story to be a little bit like, I don't like characters that are just naturally strong without introducing like weaknesses or introducing like a competent, like a stronger villain or something like that, because it's good to have like strong characters, but you have to make sure that you mellow it out like as best as you can with like balance.
I get it. Did they do that for Mario?
No, it was Peach. It was Princess.
I know, but I'm saying, was it the same? Like, did Mario have sort of like a?
Oh yeah, he had a great arc of like coming into his own, and it was like it was. I mean, I do dislike the way that most movies are done. It's an hour and a half to 2 hours maximum. It's very, very formulaic, and I think that formula is good, but when you just repeat the same thing over and over and over again, you don't really expand on anything. That's where you kind of run into some problems.
Yeah.
So now that's me as a film critic. We went to go see it with some, with I believe my nephews. And it was like, they enjoyed it marvelously. Yeah. So obviously in that perspective, it's a success. And I have criticized people who criticized, you know, Transformers, going, where's the deep emotional plots, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's not that kind of entertainment, right? Wow. So I do say that, you know, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, that I thought it could be better, but I think everything could be better, right? Like, everything can be improved and brought up to a level that is just absolutely, you know, groundbreaking. To kind of like emphasize that, I'd say Pinocchio is probably one of the greatest films ever made.
Sure.
Original Snow White as well. It's like these were masterpieces that transcend generations and time as being an amazing story. So I think with that, looking at it that way, I'd say yes, good. I hope that they continue with those lessons, move forward, a little bit more focus on some of the other characters, a little bit more emotional development, whilst retaining the fun thing that keeps the kids entertained. That's what it's there for, yeah. And that's what we hope to see. So I'm excited. I'm fairly positive about this. I think I think Hollywood is now at the point where they're not quite there yet, but they're starting to get there. Like, the bulk of them, the majority of people are starting to understand that they're not immortal beings that get to do whatever they want, irregardless of the fans and the people who support the original IPs. Because that's what you had in the first Mario movie. It wasn't a Mario movie that was about the games. It was a Mario movie that they said, let's make this have to do with mafia and corrupt politics, but not in the way that actually makes sense. Yeah, right. And it was such a bad take on it. And if you think back to like some of the other worst movies ever made, you know, that's the problem with Hollywood. Is Hollywood walks in, says, no, 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 I'm going to give my interpretation of this film. I don't know why I did that accent, but that's the idea. That is the concept that ruins film, that ruins storytelling, that ruins IPs. When you have somebody who comes in as this director goes, I don't care what the original fans wanted. I'm going to do my own thing. And I think that more and more people are starting to understand that they can't do that in Hollywood anymore. Like, they have too many they have too much competition from too many places around the world and from different forms of media, you know, including YouTube and short content and stuff like that. It's like they've got to be the best, and they got to listen to the fans, the real fans, not the vocal fans on X and on stupid weird miniature forums all over the place. Like, just go out, talk to a whole bunch of like parents and kids and find out what they want to see in a Mario film, and then probably, you know, run with that, because it's probably going to make you the most success.
Mm-hmm. I want Wario, but baby, that's going to be so legit if he shows up. Yeah. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think about this news? Are you excited for a Mario movie? I can guarantee if the movie comes out in a couple of years and the reviews are good, that will be enough for me to go watch the original movie and definitely go see the new one in the theater. All right. Saib, just before we move on to the next story, can you just bring your mic down just like 5%? Okay. So what do we got here? Oh, okay. So Rooster Teeth. Rooster Teeth was a part of Warner Brothers up until recently, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Rooster Teeth, obviously, for anybody who's been a gamer for the last 20 years, it's or like a hardcore gamer, you are aware of Rooster Teeth. You're aware of their impact in regards to building fan communities for gaming and giving like their presence online and stuff like that and producing media. Obviously, like as a huge, huge Halo fan, they're synonymous with the Red versus Blue series, which has gone on forever. A hilarious series and very close to people's hearts. I watched some of Red versus Blue and it was very, very good. I just, for whatever reason, even though I am a huge Halo fan, it was just something that I never watched all the way through, but it's legendary. And you know, all the stuff, like all the gaming coverage and stuff that came out about that. Well, it's with sad, sad feeling that I have to announce to people, in case they don't already know, that Rooster Teeth is now officially closing down. Now, I've basically given the extent of my thoughts on it, because even though I'm aware of Rooster Teeth and I'm aware of their general impact, I never really followed them intensively beyond the Red versus Blue stuff. But Saib has, and he has some thoughts to share. So go ahead, man.
Yeah, so Rooster Teeth started out as an individually owned product, and then they were sold off to Fullscreen. So Fullscreen was bought out by Warner Brothers. And so I think they failed the minute that they lost 100% control over their company.
Mm.
And this is the thing that I tell every single person ever. You never, ever give away controlling share interest in your company ever. Do not ever do that. It is what kills companies, game studios, developers, independent creators, all the time, because the minute that a big company walks in and says, "Oh, we're going to give you lots of money. You just let us tell you exactly what to do. Now dance, monkey, dance." That's where that accent was coming from. But that ruined them. That and I followed them very closely. I listened to every single podcast right up until Bernie left. And there were some issues that showed up from time to time. I think that them getting rid of Joel was probably one of the worst mistakes they ever made. Not only was he one of the primary like pillars of the entertainment in the company, just the way that they got rid of him were like, okay, you say a little too many things that we don't like, so now you got to go. You talk about gold too much. And that killed them. That started the long death of killing them. I think there were some bad apples that they got in there, some people who were, you know, not really coherently good at what they were doing. I don't know how they got hired. There was obviously some bad apples in there from the perspective of people being accused of inappropriate activities with fans. That it's one of those weird situations where it's like, they came out years later, one of them, and was like, yes, we did do things which would have been considered not just bad, but illegal. But now that I'm of age, it's totally fine now because it's all fine and dandy, which is such a weird thing to hear from anybody. It's so weird that just hearing that. And I know a couple or two that are like that. And it's like, oh, that is so weird. That is so weird. I don't know what to say about that. But at any rate, the problems with the staff, I think, were the thing that led to them selling off the studio. I think that if they had stayed on course, I genuinely think this at least once every 6 months, I go, I wish Monty Ohm was still alive. Because it's just whenever I think about him, the story, Ruby, all of the stuff that happened with it, I feel that he was so not close to completing his vision. And that is horrifyingly sad, looking at it as a, you know, as a co-creative, not a co-creative, a creative in the same field, kind of, sort of, You know, it's like, it's like that hurts when you think about somebody who had so much more storytelling and so much more writing to do, and for whatever reason they just missed out on that, and that really sucks. That really, really sucks. So yeah, just overall, I think that they dropped the potential of what could have been the minute that they sold out, and that was their worst crime. They had other crimes, including when they were running their news division. We brought them a story that was that showed off corruption coming from especially other news journalists, game journalists, you could call them, and they flat out refused to run the story because they were their friends, they were their connected people. I spoke with one of the heads of that department, and he just flat out told us, no, we're not running any kind of a story like this. You know, and then he made some threatening passes. Stuff like that just ruined that experience for me, and ultimately was what ended up ruining them as a thing, because you could see it worse and worse and worse. And I talked to friends and people who like the series, and I say, what was the thing that kind of, you know, made you stop watching it? And it's like, more often than not, was like when it came to the news journalism side of their company, it was like they couldn't trust them because they were too close and they were too buddy buddy with some of these studios.
Interesting.
And they were covering for their faults, and you know, and that whole thing is back again, which we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, that was, I think, their fall point, and it's terribly sad. When Fullscreen got rid of Bernie and forced him out of the company, they signed their own failure on that, because like Bernie came back with a new podcast just a little while ago, him and Ashley, and it was one of the most top downloaded podcasts of the year in just one release. And I think its success is continuing to grow because of everything that has happened with this recently. I've got to listen to the latest podcast that because I haven't had a chance to, but that just basically shows it. That is what happens when you lose control of your dream, when you put it into the hands of somebody else who isn't content to make a general profit off of what you're doing, by doing an investment and getting a long-term return on investment. This was a company that walked in, bought them out, and then immediately steered the ship into an iceberg. And then when they repaired the damage that did, they immediately sailed into another iceberg, and then to another iceberg, and then to another iceberg. And it's like, who are you? Who do you have running the show here? Because whoever is a complete and total, you know, doesn't know how to do anything. So that's the thing, and that's sad, and it's disappointing. But it's not as disappointing as what Warner Brothers is doing next,
right? Well. It's relatively similar levels of disappointing. I'd say certainly higher levels of stupidity. Let's move on to this. Warner Brothers. So they've had an interesting year as far as in regards to all their divisions, including movies, which they're primarily known for, but also for gaming. They released Hogwarts Legacy, which was the best-selling game of last year, which is significant because almost always it's a Call of Duty game. But it beat it out. It sold 20 million copies, which is nuts. Absolutely nuts. But they also put out Suicide Squad Kill, the Justice League. It's like the duality of man, right? Like, one is like peak success, and it's a fantastic game. I'm talking about Hogwarts Legacy, obviously. And then the other is the exact opposite, right? It reminds me of that joke from Friends when Monica and Rachel are asking Chandler to describe Joey's new girlfriend. And he says, you remember Kathy Bates in Misery? Well, she looks the exact opposite of that. And I just say, what's Suicide Squad like? Well, you know Hogwarts Legacy? Well, it's the exact opposite of that, right? So, anyways, that's what Warner Brothers, if you were to sum up what their gaming year was like. one was immensely successful and the other was a big disappointment in terms of, well, fan reception, but also in terms of sales and player retention, which is significant because that's what you need most when you have a live service type of game. You need to constantly have people playing. You need to constantly be giving them new content. And at the moment, I think the people playing this game, at least on Steam, is in the very low hundreds, or mid hundreds, actually, because it recently went on sale. Anyway, we're talking about this again because an executive over at Warner Brothers, a guy named J.P. Perrette, was recently speaking at the Morgan Stanley Technology, Media, and Telecom Conference, speaking about what Warner Brothers' long-term strategy is going to be for their IPs and how they're going to make use of them in video games. Now, aside, let me ask you a question. If you were in some way in charge of the creative angle of your company and the way that you're going to make use of games, you look at Hogwarts Legacy, best-selling game of last year, receives rave critical reviews across the board. And you have that on the one hand, and then you have Suicide Squad on the other hand, which received middling to very low reviews and barely has anybody playing it and is a live service game. Moving forward, what would you choose to try and, you know, take your IPs like Game of Thrones and what else are they? Well, Harry Potter, obviously, the DC Universe. What would you try to do moving forward in order to ensure the security of your bottom line and the long-term health of the IPs you own?
Generally, I'd start to look at what worked, what isn't working. I'd look at the trends and see what is failing, what markets are growing within the video gaming market itself, and follow the genres that have found long-lasting success.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That would make sense because, you know, for at least at present, while there was a time where live service games were sort of the hot new thing, and to some degree there are people that still play those types of games, it's relatively few. It's games like Destiny that are sort of, or Apex Legends, I guess you can put them under that umbrella, where they continue to be successful, but very few other ones because it's just because they take up so much of your life. But with single-player games like Hogwarts Legacy, not only are, you know, do they make people happy and the people that are fans of these IPs happy and keep sort of the ecosystem surrounding that IP, make people want to come back to it instead of just completely giving their life over to it. That's what single-player games do. You know, if they had a live service game, they might get bored of it. Well, that sort of logic doesn't seem to rub off of J.B. Perrette in any sort of way, because at this conference, he announced his plan to double down on the live service model. And here's a quote. "Rather than just launching a one-and-done console game, how do we develop a game around, for example, Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter that is a live service, where people can come in and live and work and build and play in that world on an ongoing basis?" That's what he wants to do for not just Harry Potter, but all the other major IPs that they own. Now, it should be noted that he doesn't intend to make any of these future live service games AAA. Instead, it's going to be the crap mobile stuff where barely any effort is put into it, but, you know, people who have phones are just going to play it mindlessly. And it's going to be for that type of audience. So to the people who are looking forward to Hogwarts Legacy 2, I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but this certainly does put a nail in the proverbial potential coffin in it ever happening, because they seem to want to go in this direction. They didn't seem to learn anything from the terrible reception of the Game of Thrones games or the DC games that released on mobile, and now they're just going to double down on it. So, yeah, makes a total load of sense, right, Seb?
The stupidity on display is just, it's like this guy was studying at the feet of Bobby Kotick and whoever runs EA right now.
Yeah.
For years, and never put two and two together as he watched their stock prices slowly drop over the last 15 years. Like, Now, yeah, sure. Bobby Kotick had a lot of ups, but he also had a lot of downs.
Right.
And he had so many downs that, you know, a lot of people were expecting him to be named to some like high position in Microsoft, but strangely, that hasn't happened yet. I wonder if that has anything to do with just the absolute stupidity and total failure of everything that he was touching in the last 5 years.
Right.
And if you're smart enough to look at the past, you can see that it didn't start 5 years ago. It started 15 to 10 years ago and then slowly crept in and started to rot it from within, because you don't get rot overnight. Rot doesn't happen overnight. That takes years to develop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so like, it's a good thing that you made a comparison between him and Bobby Kotick, because Bobby Kotick should be a warning, like what's the poetic term to use? You guys know what I mean. What Bobby Kotick did, the reason why he was around for so long is because he made decisions like this that are friendly to the investors and made them a lot of money. That's what mm-hmm. happened. But the problem is, what Bobby Kotick did is he completely annihilated any positive sentiment from the core base of the people that were in love with the Activision Blizzard franchises, because he was going for the short-term gain, but wasn't concerned with the long-term health and the ecosystem surrounding these franchises. If J.B. Perrette is steering the creative direction of all these properties and the video games that are going to spawn out of them strictly towards the live service mobile game thing, it's not going to be of long-term benefit. Now, it's not an impossibility that maybe something like a Grand Blue Fantasy sort of thing could happen with these franchises, where there is actually a pretty decent balance between the mobile games and the single-player games, right? But given that that is sort of a anomaly in the wider scheme of things, I highly, highly doubt it. So, yeah, good luck ever seeing a Game of Thrones game like Hogwarts Legacy or any good DC game coming out in the near future. I just hope that at least Superman Legacy or whatever the hell it's called that's coming out next year is going to be at least decent, because it doesn't seem like I have much hope for their gaming division moving forward, unless there's something coming out soon that I don't know about that I should be excited about. But yeah, I don't really care at the moment.
Nope. And it's just, again, this is the failure of like big corporations. Like, some people think that, oh, these corporations are too big to fail, you know, and again and again. And I've been saying this about Disney for the past few years. And yes, it has taken years, but they are hemorrhaging. They are hemorrhaging badly. Yeah. And if they don't clean up their act, if they don't get things right, you know, in their base, we're going to watch the fall of one of the biggest, most prestigious companies in the world's history. And it will be the warning letter to everybody who thinks they're smarter than the consumer, than they're smarter than the facts of nature. Right. And I've seen some big companies fail. One, a very large company that failed, they failed because they doubled their base. They gained 100% of what they were every year, like clockwork, mm-hmm. until they got to this point where they thought it was going to happen again. And like, you looked at them and you said, you are currently selling to 95% of the people who could possibly be your consumers. You need to stop thinking about growth and switch to sustainability. And they said, no, every year we've doubled, therefore we shall double again. So they took out a loan based on the fact that they double again. Guess what that loan turned out to cost them? Absolutely everything. And this happens with big billion-dollar companies all the time. So yeah, so this is just it's a warning lesson. It's an effigy of like, do not do this. Do not fail to understand the world that you're in. And I think that we won't see that much great stuff coming out of Warner Brothers Gaming, because they simply put, the people that are in charge do not understand the market that they are in. I listened to this guy's speech. He sounded like a person who was decent at public speaking, who had somebody give him a whole bunch of buzzwords, tag words, and things. But if you were to put a game into his hands, he would have no idea how it worked. And worse than that, he would have no understanding at all of how the industry worked around him. These are the people who will drive you into the ground because they do not understand the product that they are selling. It's like going to a shoe salesman and the shoe guy has the shoes tied around his head, you know, like their ear covers going, look at these amazing models. This is so comfortable. Meanwhile, he's standing on a bunch of like really sharp gravel and you're like, what are you doing? And he's like, this is great. I feel so much better now. And it's like, oh, you're an idiot who doesn't know anything about the industry that he's in. Great.
Yeah. It's so apparent. Mm-hmm. And just the way that he's speaking. I just have to hope that I can chalk Occam's razor up to this guy. But I just can't help but think that he doesn't care.
Like, no.
Really, that just money is the bottom line when it really should be the long-term creative sustainability. But anyway, yeah, it's just a repeat of stuff that we tend to talk about a lot. Now, let's go from one evil gaming company to probably the most evil gaming company on the planet. What has EA done now?
Oh, EA. The
arts of electronic variety, supposedly.
The stupidity that we just talked about with Warner Brothers is on full display now, even more so with EA.
Really?
And
with EA?
Yeah, who knew? And I cannot wait for this to be their absolute death knell. I have been wanting EA to shatter into a million pieces and be ever so remembered as one of the worst companies in history, second only to people who manufacture mines targeted at children. The level of incompetency, of stupidity, of absolute sheer despotic insanity is right here. So, Andrew Wilson discusses his plans for generative AI, including making development 30% more efficient. Now, there is some, you know, wisdom in that. That's sort of a good move. But that's also like noticing that, hey, if you put gasoline on a fire, it makes fire go big. So it's sort of like that, like Neanderthalic baseline thinking that can't really, like, it's like it's there, but it doesn't really, it's not really going to get anywhere, especially when you hear his next point, which is going to be encouraging gamers to spend 10 to 20% more money on EA games.
Yeah, no.
And then continuing that with, and more fun stuff. It's like this guy never watched any of the Terminator movies ever. The fact that he, now let me clarify that, because some people will hear that and they'll go, Stop, what are you talking about? They're not making robots. No, they're not making robots. They're making an AI, which is smarter than any robot that we currently have. And he's designing it to mislead, confound, control, and manipulate people into giving his company more money for roughly the same thing. That means that he doesn't understand the dangers of AI. The dangers of AI is when you make the AI hate or manipulate humans as a necessary cost to growth and development. This is one of the most stupid, airhead, dumbass things I have ever heard. And I have heard some really, really dumb things in my time. I have been in meetings where somebody asks about, well, if you put too much weight on an island, won't it just flip over? You know, just really priceless gems of intelligence like that. This is the dumbest thing you could possibly do for your own, like, guaranteed survival into the future. You're going to make an AI that manipulates people intentionally and for profit. If you think this is a good idea, you are going to be one of those people that is going to be responsible for some great mass, like, AI causing of death and destruction. And then when people finally figure out whose fault it is, they march you up to a hill and probably do something that's not so fun to you at that point. That is the baseline concept for anybody who looks at an AI and says, you know what we can use this for? We can use this to screw over other human beings. At some point, do they not realize that the AI is not going to be able to tell the difference between them and the people that they want them to screw over?
Right. Yeah. Like, that's what happens when you play God.
Exactly. Are you so stupid to think that this isn't going to affect you at some level in the future? That you're so blinded by your desire to... EA has not been doing bad. If they just sat down and were like, yeah, we're assholes and we're just going to keep on taking advantage of people. If that's what they'd said, they probably could do that almost forever. Because
they had people buying their bloody sports games. And it never occurred to them to use that bloody AI in place of the people that they have, quote unquote, working on those games. Because at least the AI would probably do something innovative. But anyways.
But no, this is... And make no mistake, these are the types of people who will ultimately get a large portion of the human population killed and will sit there going, I didn't think it would do that.
Yeah.
It's like you made something to manipulate people. Like, again, every time somebody does this, it ends up getting themselves or their ideology killed at some point.
Yeah,
like it is, or puts the people that follow the concept into this endless torture hole of insanity. It's like this is the dumbest thing you could possibly do. It's akin to people who are like, "Hey, can we genetically modify a monster who will eat people and do our bidding?" It's like, "Oh yeah. You get the first part done. The second part." Probably not so much. Yeah, probably not so much. It's like never watched Jurassic Park, never watched, Terminator series, never watched any cautionary tale telling you, careful, do not go in this direction. Remember when I mentioned Pinocchio? That people need to, like, you need to be, I think CEOs, they need to have a test before they can lead a company, where they watch like Pinocchio and then they have to write a report on it. And if they don't like understand the baseline concepts of like corruption and like due diligence and like the fox in the hen house concepts, like you don't deserve to be in power because you're literally too stupid. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is. And again, this is the corporate educated elite that doesn't actually understand anything. All they understand is how to manipulate markets to make things go burr. And then things go burr, and then you get more money. And they think that way forever until they hit something that, doesn't go burr. It goes chomp. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's absolutely. It's mind-boggling. Mind-boggling stupidity.
Just to be clear, when it comes to using generative AI, I obviously agree with Saib when it comes to using it to manipulate people to produce more money. We're not saying that it can't be used to create a more effective workflow. So for example, if you wanted to create more animations with the way that a player runs in a game, you could use that type of technology to make it look more lifelike and, not just look like a loop that, stops every 2 seconds. Stuff like that is fine. It's when EA is using it to try and manipulate people to not do as, do it to the extent that they should in order to advance the art and earn themselves the money and earn the trust of their player base, that's where we have a problem. And I have no doubt that EA, they continue to be the most evil company in gaming for a reason. And this is just further proof of that. Although, I don't know. Hopefully we'll be able to see like improvements in the sports games, but something tells me that that's not going to happen. Anyways. All right. Well, let's just get this thing out of the way, I guess. I don't even know how to address this. This is just, this whole situation is just making me anxious. What is going on with Sweet Baby this week, Saib?
Oh, it got worse.
Really?
It got way worse. Remember when I said that there were people who did some digging into the past comments? And again, I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just letting these idiots speak for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And the people who, like, with Justice League that came out recently, total garbage,
right,
dumpster fire of a game that was. They came out and said, hey, we weren't involved on the advanced things of that. We just came in to consult and all blah, 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 blah. This wasn't actually us. Turns out one of their writers that worked for Sweet Baby was labeled as lead writer. Oh, yes. Very small. Just came in to do some light edits. Yes, that's what they were involved. They didn't come in for over a year as a lead writer to make one of the worst story narrative games and most disrespectful story narrative games ever to exist,
right,
in my humble opinion. It wasn't enough to do that. It wasn't enough that one of these, that the original creator came in and who made it clear in her own voice, in her own recording, that she was coming in to take over from who used to run gaming and to replace them with more, as she called them, dope people. That's an actual quote. But what she means by that is people who come in and do things that make the gaming industry move in the direction that she wants it to move in, because she believes that there's that there's no longer a need for original creators to be involved for certain types of people, you know, racially stereotyping people and then saying that all of those people need to go. This isn't my translation. This is her direct words. Mm-hmm. And this is insane. Because it's been getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And it's at this point now where Gabe stepped in, head of Steam. That Gabe, Lord Gabe. Lord Gabe stepped in at the request of all of these people who have been begging. Not just these people, not just the company, but all of the news journalists, all the gamer journalists have come out and said, these people need to be removed. They made a group on Steam that asked for that their stated goal was to let people know what games Sweet Baby was involved with.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's their whole thing.
Just
they don't allow for. Sorry, they don't allow. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, dude. Like, just in case people don't know, this whole Sweet Baby Inc. thing, they label themselves as a consulting firm that major game developers and publishers can go to in order to help. I guess you could say enhance, but that's not an accurate word, but let's just say enhance, quote unquote, the scripts of the games in order to promote ideals that surround diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, organically speaking, like, if people want to make a diverse set of characters with a diverse set of ideas and represent cultures and politics, that's fine. That's what art is. It's when people try to inject it as a way of furthering an ideology and artificially trying to tamper with other people's works of art. That's what, from what I understand, people tend to have a problem with. And that's what these people on Steam and as a part of this group are speaking out against. So just in case you guys want to know.
Yeah, and we have a really good example of this. That's a real example. It's an existing example, and that is the last Mass Effect game.
Oh, really?
That wasn't directly Sweet Baby, as far as I understand it. It was the people who ended up founding it, the collection of people that were all in agreement and partnering with some of the early voices in this whole thing. Because again, and this is one of the greatest ways of looking at this. This isn't it's not about like growing diversity. That's not what it's about. Pure and simple, that's not what it's about. It's censoring the fans. Because if you wanted to have diversity, then everybody would have a character creator essentially like Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
You can make anything you want. And you have to actually create something in order to make something look good. Because if you hit the randomizer on that, you just get this like horrifying mess of like giant purple beard, bright green hair, deep brown, like not human brown, but like, you know, like mud, like that kind of like it's a particular like tint that they have in the game. It's like it's made for like mud elementals, but that makes what your, you know, what your skin looks like. And then it adds a weird tail on you with spikes and things. And it creates this monstrous look that, again, doesn't, it's not anything remotely human. It looks monstrously bizarre. That kind of thing where it's like gross combination. It's not about that. They don't want that. That's not good. But what they don't want, and I digress a little there, but what they don't want is they don't want you to have the choice to make certain things. And so if you remember in the Mass Effect game, there wasn't any, you couldn't make white people in that game as the primary protagonists.
Oh, really?
The two choices. You had one where it was there very clearly like, and they were very clearly like slightly more like Mexican or Spanish-ish, or not Spanish-ish, Latin American, a little bit more Latin American look to them, about like, looked like halfsies sort of. And again, that's fine as long as you give people choice, right? Like that's what they're doing, is they're censoring that ability for you to choose what you want to look like. And the thing is very frustrating for me as a gamer, is like, I never go with something that I look like. I always go for something that's usually polar opposite of what I look like. And I know a lot of gamers who do that. A lot of gamers, I mean, that's why you have people play as orcs.
It's yeah.
Like green skinned, giant shoulders, enormous tusks coming out of their mouth. Not these weird orcs that are, they're basically look human and they have a slightly different skin tone. You know, not that. No, like real crazy looking orcs, like Warhammer orcs, World of Warcraft orcs. Like people, why do people play those? Because they want to play something that's different from them. Yeah. So instead of, rather than trusting that, which has been a proven thing in video gaming for a very long time, that people want to play, when they're playing an escapist-based game, they want to play something that is not them. And so instead of being excited about that, because you can then get a chance to introduce more choice to people, instead they're censoring the fans because they're not interested in games coming out that are like Baldur's Gate that have a variety and plethora of options for people to choose. And then for you to interact with the story, you know, to have that story shape however you want. Do you want to seduce the beautiful girl? You want to go for the handsome burly guy, or the whatever is in between? Those options are provided to you to create your own story in whatever category you want it to exist as. But they don't want that. What they want is to control what you can, what you can't play. So they want to say, no, we're not letting you play this type of person or that type of person. You're only allowed to play this type of person. And I said this last week. This is what the biggest frustration, this is why they're grifters. Because instead of going for, be just more generally inclusive, give players the option to do whatever they want, and you give them the Lego box and you just let them create whatever they want. Instead of doing that, there is this concerted effort to just say, no. We want you to create these narrow identified characters and then have them played in a very narrow specific way, and don't give the ability to have choices where you can make terrible choices, because that's not what they want. You know, these are the people who are, they look at PALS, the PALS game that came out recently, and they go, this is horrible. People can do horrible things to other humanoid characters in the game. It's like, it's a game.
Yeah,
it's a game about monsters, and you're in a world with flying monsters. There's no correlation to the real world here. It's the control, and that's why I call them grifters, because this is the control, and their grifting becomes more and more apparent every week. Instead of being truthful about what this Steam group wanted to do, instead of being accurate in their description of what they are doing and what's going on there, they label them as the worst things they can think of. I'm not even going to repeat it. The worst possible things that they can come up with. And it's not just them. It's the journalists who are digging into this. They go, I looked at it, and after looking for several minutes, I found somebody who made an exaggeratory, inflaming statement. This clearly shows that everybody in this group clearly has a membership for their local, hate campaign group. And it's so frustratingly stupid, because one of the other big things that you can kind of note here is that a lot of the games that Sweet Baby have been involved with have been like big AAA stuff.
Yeah.
And what should be celebrated right now is an opportunity for smaller developers to be able to, come out and make their stuff shine. But instead of that, these journalists run to defend the giant corporations with the big pockets and the people who use words to swindle people. Because when you have the leader of this company say that they're going to take over, that they're going to redefine the industry, that they want to kick out certain people to prevent them from ever having an ability to be involved in this again, instead of just saying like, hey, let's talk about unity, let's talk about bringing people together, let's talk about bringing in the ultimate ability for you to choose, and let's celebrate games that give you that ability. No, you can't select a game where you play as a custom created character. You can't have that selected as the as a contender for winning the game of the year player protagonist, because that's just a whatever people want to have, which would win in a landslide, by the way. If you had a choice between greatest character that you've played as in a video game, do you think it would be Kratos, or do you think it would be the Dragonborn who would win that in a just a sheer load of votes? I think Dragonborn would win probably by a landslide.
Pretty much.
But again, what's there? Well, people can play as whatever they want, including a lizard person. That's not acceptable. Why isn't it acceptable? Because we want to create a character, force you to play that single perspective, and then not to have anything else. And if you dare say that you don't enjoy that, then you're the evil person in the room. Not misunderstood, have bland tastes. No, you're evil. You have to be excised from society, which is what, again, these people tried to do to everybody who was involved in this little group on Steam that just notified each other about which games did or did not have Sweet Baby in them. Yeah. Like, insane. Absolutely insane. This is what we got. We've got this is being claimed to be Gamergate 2 all over again.
God and, help us.
And it's like I roll my eyes because yes, there was I thought I was originally, and I have always been very pro, like, let me play what I want. Give me as many choices as you can. I don't like games where I'm pigeonholed into playing the one beefy male guy character. I don't even play a lot of I've barely played the whole Witcher series, because I don't like Geralt. Yeah. Is an interesting character from a distance, and I like the books. I think are pretty, as far as fantasy goes, they're pretty good. They're like A tier. There's nothing wrong with them. Like it's that perspective. It's not interesting. It's not my favorite story, but it's a lot of other people who I really like. It's their favorite story, and I have no qualms about that. But the fact that it's like they're not interested in giving people choice.
No. It's about transforming art to suit a particular view of the way the
exactly.
world should be and the way that art should be.
Yeah.
And to echo your sentiments about Witcher 3, for the longest time I wasn't able to get into the game because of that. It's because I loved playing my own character and creating my own story. And, I did eventually play Witcher 3 and it's awesome. It's one of the greatest games ever made. But there's something about being able to create your own character the way that you want, regardless of whatever race or species it is, and go save the world, that is universally appealing. And if you just allow people to do that, I think the truly benevolent side of, if there, you can even say that for the people at Sweet Baby Inc., would happen naturally in games, where games would continue to be and grow in diversity and represent a variety of backgrounds and viewpoints. But by doing this, it's just going to create greater resistance. And unfortunately, it's just going to create a whole bunch of people that, like, they're going to be creating the villain, you know what I mean? Like, there wasn't a villain, but because it keeps saying that there's a villain, they're going to create the villain.
Yeah. Well, they create the villain with this, but they also create the villain in, especially in Gamergate, there was a lot of questions about journalistic ethics standards. And those all got, anybody who asked that was labeled as, oh, you're just one of the evil people who doesn't want video games to have, you know, be inclusive to other people. It's like, no, that's a completely different conversation here. And again, I will stump for this for ages. The initial burst of Gamergate stuff was, excuse me, why have you been caught bribing a video game company? Or conversely, why has this developer been caught bribing a games journalist to give their game a high rating when we don't like it? And that's the crux of this whole thing. And it's still, because a lot of these people, same people, like same people group, like these people all hanging out in the same people 10 years ago when this whole thing started originally. And now I read an article yesterday. It came out and said that Gamergate was responsible for everything wrong.
Every bad thing that's happened since 2014.
Every bad thing that's ever happened in the last 10 years, including like all the political stuff and all this other things. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's, Gamergate is not the reason that there's a dude who eats people running Haiti now. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I think that correlation there is like probably smaller than like the hair on the back of a flea's leg. Sure. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there, that out of the mountain of evidence that you have about corrupt politicians and Gamergate having caused that, I'm pretty sure that there's something wrong there. But again, it's like this isn't my, like, you know, being exasperated about the thing that's going on. This is their own journalistic empires putting articles out that say this.
Yeah.
And it's mental. I can't believe it. So yeah. Sad.
So that's where stuff is in regards to that. I hope to God this isn't Gamergate 2. I just hope that it fizzles out and, you know, the Steam group just goes on and does whatever, and then, like, but something just tells me that because people like courting controversy, that things are just going to spiral out of control, because we talked about this last week, and things really haven't quieted down at all. So we'll see. All right. And we're going to have to, we'd be remiss if we didn't comment on this. We're concluding on a sad piece of news, but we have to talk about this. So there is a legend in the world of both gaming and anime named Akira Toriyama, who passed away this past week at the age of 68. He was probably most famous for his art work for Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. But in regards to the world of gaming, he contributed art to, you could argue it's probably the greatest game ever made, that being the original Chrono Trigger. And mm-hmm. a part of that game's identity was the insanely likable, colorful, and character infused designs that were in that game's artwork. And same thing for Dragon Quest. Where would the if it weren't for the art that Akira Toriyama contributed to that series, the world of RPGs and gaming would look very different. It was just so archetypal and so influential what he did for that series. We wouldn't have Pokemon inside if it weren't for him. We talked about that a few weeks ago when we talked about Power World, but it's true. That's how influential he was. Now, I never watched... Well, I did watch Dragon Ball Z when I was very, very young kid. I don't remember anything about it. I just remember, you know, it'd be on the rotation of cartoons that would be on Saturday mornings, and I thought it looked cool. And I remember I liked Trunks because he had a sword. But yeah, I just, with the stuff that I have seen from him, he was just such an icon. And there's just something about his designs, the personality of them. It just, there was a universality to them that make people like him, you know, in the Hall of Fame with, you know, other animators like Hayao Miyazaki or Makoto Shinkai, or I think that's what his name is, from that part of the world. So it's a tragic loss, and he will be sorely missed. At least it's very fitting that he died in the Year of the Dragon, right? Mm-hmm. Anything you want to say about Akira Toriyama? Did you ever watch Dragon Ball?
A little bit. Like, I mean, everybody's seen clips of it. Again, one of the shows I never really, like, I've seen a lot of, but I never really got. Like, never really understood why people loved it so much. Mostly because the characters were harder to, they're generally, like, hard to understand. But it was what made me get into Fairy Tail, which is one of my favorite, like, antidepressants of all time. Huh. Because when I would talk about, like, you know, when I would go to, like, conventions and people like, oh, you have to watch Dragon Ball. I'm like, hey, I tried, but it wasn't like, oh, well, then in that case, maybe you'll like Fairy Tail more. And I did like Fairy Tail a lot more because it was just happier. I mean, there's an actual character called Happy in Fairy Tail. So it still has the soundtrack is just awesome for that game. But that's what these kinds of games do, is they create this beautiful, like, you know, inspiring concept. And I like that. So, yeah.
So he will be missed, and at the very least, his death has. I saw on social media that it made a lot of people go and play Chrono Trigger. And by the way, guys, if you haven't played Chrono Trigger, for the love of God, play Chrono Trigger. Mm-hmm. Like I played it for the first time 2 years ago. It came out in 1995, if I recall correctly. But that game holds up, man. And I'm not exaggerating. Like, there's no such thing as a perfect game. But I think that is the closest that a game has ever gotten to perfection. There's virtually nothing wrong with it. And yeah, his art was part of what made that game great. Anyway, guys, I'm sorry for all the sad news, but it was a lot of important stuff to talk about. Hopefully next week we'll be a little bit more positive. But thanks for joining us. Make sure you hit the like button if you like this show, this episode. It helps not only this video, but also all the other videos on the Triple S League channel. Leave a comment if you have any thoughts on any of the stuff that Simon and I talked about. So, do you have anything you want to promote before we finish tonight?
No. We've got some stuff coming up. Again, we're working on a very big, very big change to our Patreon. Very big announcement. Very big stuff coming in the future.
Cool.
It was delayed this year substantially, and I hate that. But we want to do it right.
Yeah.
So.
And you guys can just find me on all the regular forms of social media, just at Max Jarrett. I'll put a link to that in the description box below. Make sure to go check out my newest video, which I just put out 2 days ago. It's on an old PS2 game called Drakengard. It sucks, but it's a brilliant game at the same time. If you want to try and understand how that makes any sense, make sure you go over there and check it out. I'll also have another video out next week, probably on Tuesday. All right, guys, that does it for this episode of Maximum News. Until we do this again next week, I want to remind you, as always, and as per usual, stay yellow.
Goodbye.